Because I could pervert judgment that way. And the Old Testament talks about judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Judgment can also be a positive thing. I judge that they need help. We have to use good judgment. Well, people who refrain from judgment have judged things already. They have judged that nothing is worthy of their attention, and nothing is worthy of their concern, and nothing is worthy that they should risk themselves to do good judgment. You know what I'm saying? Like, they look at this verse and they say, well, then I will not risk anything so that I can avoid judgment. Thinking amiss that this includes the judgment of God. Man always wants to bring God down to their level. And honestly, when they read judge not, they think, throw all judgment out. Throw out everything God has said. Throw it all out, and now no judgment. There's no such thing as sin. There's no such thing as unrighteousness, because we cannot judge any of it, and neither can God. That's what they think. God can't judge. Jesus never judged. Nobody can judge. Jesus certainly judged. He judged the scribes and Pharisees. In Matthew chapter 23, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Even in 9, even in chapter 6 here in Matthew, he was judging people. He says, you know, don't be like the hypocrites. They think they appear to be righteous, right? They go sounding a trumpet before them as they go to prayer. They want to make a big show out of their giving. You know, they do their alms to be seen. They fast to be seen. That's judgment. He's judging actually their motivations of why they do it. Now that's something I can't reach to. I don't know why people do things unless they confess it. And many times people do inadvertently confess the motivations behind their actions. It's an odd thing sometimes. But they let it slip because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So we should use good judgment. Take care how we judge, considering that our judgment will proceed along the same lines. And what it means you need to do is when you judge anything, you have to consider and submit yourself to the same judgment. Am I willing to submit myself and subject myself to that judgment? And if you are willing, and then you judge, you must know you will be judged like that. That's how you will be judged. You know? If I judge something that is sort of not specifically laid out in the scripture, if I say, that's sin, then I have already pronounced judgment on myself. See, people judge, whether they like it or not. They see something on television or something like that. They say, that's so wrong. You've judged. That's not right. You should never, I would never do that. They've judged. Everyone judges. The idea of saying judge not is ridiculous as far as to make it an axiomatic statement of always, ever, never, never judge. He didn't say never judge. He says, judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. That is a very different statement than saying never judge. Never judge anything. In fact, make void the judgment of God. Deny the judgment of God. That's not what Christ said. It is important to use judgment and good judgment. I don't think the matter can be stressed enough. And people say, Paul, you know, you ramble on an awful lot. So what? I could dwell on this for hours. I could sit here rambling on about judgment for hours. Because it's exciting to me. If it's not exciting to you, you probably should have turned off the Bible studies a while ago. And now's your latest chance. It's for us to bid you farewell. You know, it goes back to the Garden of Eden. When they ate of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, when they ate that fruit, they knew that they were naked. They had knowledge. Their conscience was awakened. And they knew, we're naked. We don't want to be naked. They made a measure. They measured it. And then people could say, and this is thought has occurred to me, well, what about people who live in far-flung jungle societies, say, that were isolated, and they were pretty much naked? Why don't they feel that shame? And I think that at some point, you know, human societies operate different, and everyone's conscience is somewhat different. But let's say you have a human society in which clothing is a social thing that people do. Remember, their conscience was suddenly awakened to the good and evil of being naked, and they chose to be clothed, Adam and Eve. But, you know, our consciences also tell us that murder is wrong, and it's a sin. And it also tells us a lot of things that are sin. So, when you get to be a certain age, if you look around and see everything else is clothed, but you are not clothed, that's why children at a certain age begin to be conscious of their nakedness, right? But if you're in a society, but let's say there are all kinds of ways for consciences to become hardened. So in those societies that lived primitively, at some point in time when they splintered off from other groups of men, the stigma on nudity became removed. It doesn't mean that their conscience at some point might see nakedness as undesirable, because in those societies, they still is some amount of modesty. You know, it is nobody, you know, nobody around walks around. There's no society where people greet each other by spreading their cheeks, so to speak. And that may seem vulgar, and it sure is. But what I'm saying is the most private parts still remain hidden. And usually people like to cover up their most private parts. Those almost naked societies, I think about them, you know, they still put gourds on their penises and so on and so forth. And, you know, and their hair is given them for a covering as well. Mankind does have a conscience, though, whether it be a primitive society or another society, and they find fault with themselves and with others. And that is the measure by which the judgment begins. Why behold, verse 3, and why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. So this is the old one. People are very familiar with this one as well, from because the Sermon on the Mount is one of Jesus' most famous speeches. It is the long, you know, speech he gave from the mountain. And he speaks of the mote. You know, it's a speck. A tiny little speck is in your brother's eye, and you don't consider that you have a beam, you know, a large piece of timber. So obviously that's a bit of an exaggeration. And that is that's a figure of speech, hyperbole, we usually call it. I mean, you exaggerate to make the point.